This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to today's Positive Parenting Show. I'm Armin Brott. If you think about it, you know, we all sustain emotional wounds pretty much as often as we do physical ones. Things like failure, guilt, rejection, and loss are just as much a part of life as the occasional scraped elbow or pulled muscle. If you get a cut, you put a bandage on it. If you get a sprained ankle, you put ice on it. That's just what we do. But for many of us, our first aid kit for emotional injuries is not just understocked, it's non-existent. As a result, emotional injuries that didn't really seem serious enough to need professional help, they go untreated, and that ends up making us feel worse than we should for longer than we need to. For example, failure can lead to all sorts of anxiety. It can damage our self-esteem by inducing us to draw conclusions about our skills and abilities and capacities that are really inaccurate and completely distorted. And if we have a rejection, that can make emotional pain that is so sharp that it affects our thinking and floods us with anger and erodes our confidence and our self-esteem and can really mess with our feelings of belonging. Fortunately, there is such a thing as emotional first aid, and that is what we're going to be talking about in this part of today's show. We're going to learn how to soothe the pain that our psychological injuries can cause us and how to accelerate our emotional healing and even how to prevent our wounds from getting worse. So if you've ever had any kind of emotional injury, and who hasn't, you're really going to want to stick around for this show. The treatments are easy to self-administer, and you can even use them with your children. In the second half of today's show, we're going to continue our series on organizations that are doing terrific stuff for military families. We'll talk with one woman who has uncovered all sorts of resources that military families generally don't know about. We'll talk about employment issues, and we'll meet a number of military spouse entrepreneurs. We'll jump into emotional first aid and great organizations doing things for military families when Positive Parenting for Military Families continues right after this.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and my guest for this part of today's show is Guy Winch, who's the author of Emotional First Aid, Practical Strategies for Treating Failure, Rejection, Guilt, and Other Everyday Psychological Injuries. Guy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's talk about, from the very beginning, I guess, what are the kinds of injuries you're talking about? I mean, you know, the title of the book has got failure, rejection, guilt, but what do those things have in common?
Well, what they have in common, to my mind, is how we regard them. You know, when we get a physical injury, a cut or a scrape or a cold or a sprain, it's so obvious to us that we need to do something about it, that if we don't, it can get worse, that if we treat it, it will get better quickly, more quickly, rather. And yet, when it comes to psychological injuries like rejection or failure or guilt or loneliness or things like that, we don't have that kind of awareness. We're not aware that we can treat them. We're not aware that we should treat them. We're not aware that they can get worse if we don't. And so to me, what they have in common is that they're very frequent in how often we encounter them, and they're very much the same in how much we ignore them.
Do they have a cumulative effect that similar to the one if you ignore some sort of a physical ailment, it's going to get worse over time? Is that the natural progression of psychological injuries?
Of many of them. Of course, not of all of them, because they all come in different kinds of magnitudes. You know, like cuts and scrapes, they're rejections of all kinds of sizes. And if your friends don't like your Facebook posts about your vacation when you liked theirs, you might feel rejected. But I don't think that's going to accumulate and cause you some kind of mental damage down the road. But certain kinds of rejections might, and certain kinds of all these injuries might. So it really depends on the magnitude, and it depends on how you handle it and how you tend to handle these kinds of experiences.
You know, I want to go through. I think the book is a terrific outline, so we'll just start for some of them. Let's talk about rejection. We just had an interview a couple of weeks ago with a woman who had written a book about the science of making friends, Elizabeth Laugesen. And she talks, she's working with autistic children who have difficulties with social skills and difficulties entering conversations and sometimes feel rejected. How do you deal with rejection generally? And then we'll talk about some specifics.
Well, I think, the first thing is that we have to understand that rejections are the kind of thing that usually hurt us more than we expect them to. We have the word to describe rejection as hurt feelings, and that's a word that's true in almost all cultures around the globe, in all languages, hurt feelings. And what's interesting about rejection is when we do studies of the brain and we put people in functional MRI machines and look at what happens to them when they get rejected, we see that the same areas of the brain light up as light up and get activated when we experience physical pain. In other words, when we get rejected, we respond really similarly as we do to physical pain. It feels like pain. We respond like it's pain. And since we don't know that, we're often very concerned about a rejection because we feel like, wow, that really hurt my feelings. What's wrong with me that that would hurt my feelings so much? Why is it so troublesome? Why is it really nagging at me? So to me, the first important thing to realize is that we're wired that way. Rejections are really cause a response in our brains that makes it really hurt. And there are studies in which people were put through rejections by groups of people they absolutely despised, and it still hurt. In other words, it's not a reasonable, logical thing with rejection. We're just wired to respond to it very, very strongly.
But is there a natural hierarchy of the kinds of rejections that there's going to be, or are people just are going to randomly react in different ways? I mean, having your order messed up or being ignored or something if you're in line at Starbucks and they skip to the next person is one thing, but having somebody break up with you by sending you a text message or something is something quite different.
Absolutely. And getting bullied and shunned in school is yet another example of rejections that, you know, a lot of young kids go through and teenagers go through. And it really depends on the severity of the rejection, how meaningful the relationship or the situation was to you. We also come to these situations with our own constitutional kind of responses. In other words, in the same way when a cold or a flu goes around the classroom, some of the kids get really sick each time and some of them just don't, because they have constitutionally a different kind of response system. So we have that same kind of constitution when it comes to our psychology and our emotional responses. So all of those things are going to interact, what we bring to the situation in terms of our constitution, what the meaning and the size of the rejection is in terms of what actually happens, and then what we tend to do in our heads. Because a lot of the times, what makes the rejection really, really difficult is that we then go and become really self-punitive and really self-blaming, and we have these internal narratives that are very, very negative and down on ourselves, and we're actually making the damage much, much worse ourselves. And so all those kinds of things contribute to determine how damaging a single experience can be.
Now, nobody wants to be rejected, but you, in your spare time, sometimes are doing stand-up comedy, and it seems like you couldn't pick a profession where you could have more rejection on a more regular basis. Why would people subject themselves to that? I mean, unless they're absolutely positively convinced that they are the funniest person around.
Well, first of all, and even if they are, they're going to have nights in which they're not.
Right,
and,
it's not going to work.
Certainly I've had experiences where I've stood on stage and asked myself that very question, what on earth am I thinking? But really, I think what people do, it's the same thing with actors. Why do actors do what they do when they have to go to 100 auditions and get rejected from 99 of them to get one small little part? Why do they do that? So, you know, it's for the benefits, it's for the love of the craft. And I think that one of the things that helps people who do stand-up and helps actors is, you know, it's part of the deal. There is no stand-up comic that thinks every joke they're going to say is going to work every single time. It's expected. And not that it doesn't sting when it does happen, but it's expected, and it's expected in acting, and it's expected for kids in school that some people are going to like them and some are not. But you're hoping that on the balance, your experiences will be positive. You're hoping on the balance more kids will like you than won't, and the ones that don't like you won't really, really hate you. And so, you know, we go through these experiences because we can anticipate a certain amount of rejection and we can handle a certain amount. But certainly there are people, both actors and people who do stand-up, who give it up because it's just too much for them.
Is there a certain type of person who tends to get into those kinds of situations? And I would just sort of wonder, because everybody in my family, my two siblings and I, so I'm a writer, I've written a number of books and God knows how many hundreds of magazine articles and things. And got another sister who's a writer, and my other sister is an opera singer. And I think, you know, we've got a whole family of people who probably have some sort of self-esteem issues, but we've gravitated towards professions where we can be humiliated on a regular basis in front of large groups of people.
Well, look,
is there some kind of a psychological profile of people who put themselves in those kinds of situations more?
No, I think it's really more to do with people who have a creative bent, people who want to express themselves creatively in some kind of form, whether it's writing or acting or stand-up or singing or art or photography or poetry or really any kind of creative dance, you know, any kind of person who pursues a creative bent and is not doing it in the privacy of their own bedroom is putting themselves, you know, at risk in a very consistent way for being rejected, for, you know, for failing, for getting poor responses. But I think it's more to do with people who are, you know, are creative and who want to express themselves creatively, as opposed to people who have issues with self-esteem. I don't think that's true necessarily.
Okay. Now, the type of first aid you're talking about, is it something that is self-administered, or is it something that somebody else can help you with?
I wrote the book so that it can be self-administered, but I wrote the book so it can be a kind of psychological medicine cabinet, a toolkit that we can use, a set of skills and techniques that we can develop to address these emotional wounds when we sustain them. And I've also wrote it in such a way that you can pretty much take every single one of them and teach them to children, you know, depends on the age of the child, but, you know, certainly middle school and high school kids, and perhaps even younger in some cases, depends on the actual issue. But I wrote it so that in the same way that we are, you can take a seven-year-old who cut his finger, he'll go by himself and get a Band-Aid because he knows where they are and he knows he needs to put one on. And I wrote it in this way that we can, and children can, if we teach them, can really self-administer these things. And I wrote it in such a way that I hope that people develop the habit, really, of looking at what happens to them and looking and saying, okay, do I need to do something here? You know, when you wipe out on your skateboard or on your bicycle, the first thing you do is you check yourself. Did I break something? Is there something sprained? I mean, you check yourself first to see what other injuries you might have had. We don't do that when it comes to psychological injuries, but we should. So the idea is that we need to check ourselves when we go through these experiences. Maybe something happened and we'll get over it in a few hours, but if it's nagging at us a few days later, if we're not forgetting it, if it's really upsetting us, if we have a very negative voice in our heads that are making things worse, we need to take action. And so the book is written in a way that we can do it ourselves. If we have a supportive friend, that's nice, but actually the supportive friend can only do so much. A lot of these things we do need to do for ourselves.
Guy Winch is the author of Emotional First Aid, Practical Strategies for Treating Failure, Rejection, Guilt, and Other Everyday Psychological Injuries. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll keep talking to Guy and get into some of the other psychological injuries besides rejection. I'm Armin Brandt, and you're listening to Positive Parenting.
Bullying is not kids being kids.
It's not about good homes or bad homes.
It's not a normal part of growing up.
I shouldn't be afraid to get on the school bus.
To turn on my computer.
Message. A lock to my locker.
Did you know that a bully will stop his or her behavior in 10 seconds when their peers speak up?
Use your voice.
Hey, leave him alone.
We have the power to stop bullying.
Find out more at bullying.org.
Where you're not alone.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Guy Winch, who's the author of Emotional First Aid, Practical Strategies for Treating Failure, Rejection, Guilt, and Other Everyday Psychological Injuries. Guy, thanks for sticking with us. So
thank you very much for having
let's
me
pick up on what you were talking about before, toward the end of the first segment, about rejection. What are the tools, or what is in our first aid kit for ourselves as adults, and also what are we going to try to teach our kids? That was a great analogy about the kids being able to go to the medicine cabinet and get their own Band-Aids. So how do you teach them to deal with rejection on their own?
So first of all, I would educate, if it's kids, I would educate them about the fact that we are wired in such a way that it really, really hurts. And the fact that you're really hurt and your feelings are really hurt after you got rejected actually doesn't say anything about you or whether you are a loser or whether you're needy or whether you have bad self-esteem or whether you're weak. It actually doesn't say any of that because we are wired to feel that way. It's a natural biological response, I would practically say. So you have to explain this is why it hurts as much as it does because we are really wired that way. Second thing you want to explain to kids is it does hurt, but the one thing you have to be very careful from doing is making it worse. In the same way you would say to your kid, you know, when you have a cut on your hand, you're not going to go and put salt in it because that's going to hurt, and you're not going to walk around bleeding because then it's just going to get infected. So when you have a rejection and when your ego is bruised, do not make it worse by becoming negative about yourself, by blaming yourself, by thinking about all your faults, by asking yourself what's wrong with you. There is nothing wrong with you necessarily. People get rejected all the time. It has nothing to do with them. It has more to do with how other people are and how kids are at certain ages. And so first, get them to understand it hurts for a good reason, that it's not about them. And secondly, so that they don't, you know, to stop the bleeding and really not engage in any kind of self-talk. And use the analogy, because most kids will understand, yeah, if I have a cut, I wouldn't put salt in it. I wouldn't walk around and make it worse or cut it even more. Certainly that would think that would be ridiculous. Well, it's ridiculous to get down on yourself when you've just been rejected. So try and get them to see that same thing. But the other thing I would point out to them, one of the reasons it does hurt as much as it does, because one of the theories is that in terms of our evolution, to be ostracized from our tribe really was a death sentence when we were hunter-gatherers, you know, back in the day. And so we developed this early warning mechanism of rejection. People who, you know, felt the pain could then correct their behavior, not get rejected, and survive. And what this does, what rejection does to us to this day, A, that's why it hurts, but B, it hampers our need to belong. It hampers our need to feel like we're a part of a tribe in good standing. And being part of a tribe, quote-unquote, in good standing is a very basic need. It's not something we're very conscious of in the day-to-day, but it's something that operates very, very strongly behind the scene. So if you're a parent of a child who just got bullied or who just got rejected and they're coming home and they're feeling bad about themselves, one of the first priorities I would have was to remind them of their good standing in their tribe. Bring a couple of friends over if you can for a play date. Get them together with people who do respect them and do love them to remind them, no, you're accepted, you're loved, you're respected by these people. That would be one of the first things I would do.
You know, that's a perfect segue to loneliness. How do you begin to help people with feelings of loneliness and the hurt that goes along with that? And then I guess I just also want to ask sort of a sub-question. Can you use some of these feelings of being hurt as an object lesson for what needs to change without torturing yourself so much, without being so self-deprecating and really obsessive about it? But can you look at it from some distance and say, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe I should have done something differently, or maybe if only I would have done this. You know what I mean? So there's a healthy way of looking at it and an unhealthy way of looking at it.
Yes, and I think that, you know, if you're a parent and you want to tell your kid, okay, if you want to find one takeaway, let's find a takeaway, something you could have done differently or something you would do differently next time. Or if you, you know, had a magic wand and you could go back, what would you do differently? Would you not have worn that sweater because they thought that sweater was odd or funny or something, you know? So I would try and find a takeaway. I think that's important to do, actually, in general. And usually those takeaways are kind of obvious to us if we did something that's obviously wrong or something that obviously elicited, that kind of sharp response from people around us. In terms of loneliness, though, loneliness is a very, very difficult thing because it really impacts our physical health as much as it does our psychological health in a way, especially when our loneliness becomes chronic. Because when we're lonely, we feel very raw emotionally, and we kind of go into defensive mode in which we are very, very suspicious and very, very weary of getting hurt again. So we'll be very tentative. We'll be very hesitant to put ourselves in situations. And you'll see lonely people who will pass up opportunities to socialize because they, A, they don't see them as opportunities, and B, they're afraid that, oh, well, I'll go to the party, but I won't know anyone. No one will speak to me. I'll just feel bad. What's the point of going? And well, there's a self-fulfilling prophecy right there, because if you're not going to go, indeed no one will speak to you because you're not putting yourself in that social situation. Or they go to the party and they're so, you know, sure that no one will speak to them that they position themselves by the hummus and the dip all night away from people. And they don't actually, and they're radiating, don't come talk to me, so indeed no one will come talk to you. So that's the problem with loneliness. It makes us act very, very defensively, and we're not aware of it, but we're actually pushing people away, and that's the tricky thing to overcome.
Well, so what's the first aid for that one?
Well, there are a number of, I mean, for each of these things, I give quite a number of different techniques in the book with the ideas that people try out the things. And in the same way, we have over-the-counter pain medications, and we kind of know which one works for us because we tried them all and this one is better. The same thing in the book, I give a variety of techniques. I want people to try them and figure out what works for them, what's easiest for them to apply. But one of the things I say in the chapter about loneliness is you have to be very, very brave and very honest with yourself and look back at your habits and see what have you done that was in the line of a self-fulfilling prophecy. How were you conducting yourself in a way that might have pushed people away? Are you judging your existing relationships more harshly? Are you not seeing options because you're disqualifying them before you actually give them a chance? You know, I did one radio interview a while ago, and somebody wrote in, and they asked me this question off the show's Facebook page, and the person actually wrote on the Facebook page of the show saying, I have no opportunities to meet people who feel like I do. Well, you actually wrote into a Facebook page on a show with other people who are writing in feeling like you do. You could see who they are and reach out to them. But that was beyond, the person just couldn't see it because they're so used to not seeing options. You know, we become blind to the ones that are around us. And so it's really about changing our perspective and opening our eyes and taking responsibility and then being very, very brave and saying, I need to take an emotional chance. And when we approach people, when we contact the friend we haven't spoken to in a while, not coming across as, I haven't spoken to you in 3 months, because that's going to put them on the defensive, but rather than that, say, hey, how are you? I've missed you. Let's have coffee.
Sounds like a perfectly reasonable thing to do, but kind of hard.
There's no easy way out of loneliness. It's one of those very, very difficult quagmires that there's no easy or quick way out. We have to do it a step at a time. I suggest all kinds of strategies on how to, you know, really try and it's easier to reach out to, I think, and actually I'm sure, to 5 friends and try and set up a coffee date than it is to 1. Because out of the 5, you were likely to get a response from 1 or 2 of them, and then we can, you know, put aside with more ease the fact that 2 or 3 of them didn't respond. So you have to work on numbers,
yeah.
Like a salesperson who does cold calls. You know, the first one's upsetting, but by the 10th, you're like, okay, put a line through and go to the next one. So there are all kinds of strategies we can use to try and minimize the emotional hurt we might feel, but in essence, you can't get back into life without taking that kind of leap of faith.
Right. Well, that's hurt. We only have about a minute left, Guy, but so, I mean, that kind of an approach, it seems just like it would be the perfect thing for an adult to hear. Much harder as a parent to get a child to understand that. They're going to take these things much more harshly than we do.
Well, when children feel lonely, there's been something that's gone very, very wrong in their social situation, because they're actually, unlike adults, they're in a classroom with 20 or 30 other kids their age with similar interests and similar kind of lives. And so, you know, we have that in college, and usually people make a lot of friends in college because we're among people so similar to ourselves. If a child is feeling lonely, there's some kind of something that's not really working in a very fundamental way. And as a parent, I would really look at, are they in the right school? Do they need to get social skills training, which you can do with children? Do you need to put them in a social skills group with other children so they can learn the nuances of these kinds of things? But really look at the big picture, because loneliness, you know, it's part of adolescence and the existential angst of it. But if we're looking at preteens and early school age kids and they're feeling lonely, then there's something that's gone really wrong in terms of their social context that can and should probably be corrected.
Guy Winch is the author of Emotional First Aid, Practical Strategies for Treating Failure, Rejection, Guilt, and Other Everyday Psychological Injuries. Guy, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
At 4:15 p.m. at an office in Michigan, Angie Hicks is not at her desk. She's giving blood at the company blood drive.
At the same time in the same office, Kevin Meehan is not at his desk. He's at the doctor. Kevin has cancer and needs another round of chemo.
Kevin will need blood to fight his cancer.
Angie's blood will help him win.
When you give blood to the American Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to schedule your appointment to give blood.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Hey, guess what? It's time for today's Parents at Play column. And Samantha Fuse, as always, is here with us. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Armin. How you doing?
So you've had a chance to take a lot of trips lately.
Yes, I did. I actually just got back from Niagara Falls several hours ago.
And you were in Germany before, and it seems like you've been every time I try to call you, you're somewhere else.
Well, we do a lot of phone calls from hotel rooms. What can I tell you? I'm a busy girl. I love to travel.
You recently did a column for Parents at Play on suitcases, which you'd think, oh, how boring could that be? A suitcase is just a box, but apparently not. You really had some interesting suitcases to look at. Tell us about some of them.
Suitcases are one of the most important things to think about if you are a traveler. And even if you're not as heavy-duty a traveler as someone like me, if you are someone that likes to take your family on vacation a couple times a year, maybe your family's not so close as you go there for the holidays, you really do want to invest in a better quality suitcase, or at least one that functions as you need it to, because otherwise it's going to fall to pieces in a year or two, or worse, while you're traveling, which is why you want to invest in a little bit of a better suitcase. There's nothing worse than being at the airport and having, like, your bag split in half or something along those lines. I've seen it, and I don't want to experience it myself.
Actually, you know what? That did happen on a trip to France years ago. I remember sitting by the luggage carousel waiting for my stuff to come out, my bag to come up, and I see one of my T-shirts comes all by itself. I thought, oh, no, this can't be a good sign.
And no, so, like, that's not a good
individual
sign.
Individual socks started coming up. That was bad. But had I had some of the suitcases that you were taking a look at, tell us about some of those and the strength that they've got. I think that's an important factor.
I abuse my suitcases. I am not kind to them. I don't treat them gently. Even after one or two trips, you can just see that they've been loved. The one that I think has taken the most abuse of any suitcase I personally have ever owned and is almost no worse for the wear is the Eagle Creek Tarmac. The one that I personally own is a carry-on, and it comes with so many extras. I love it. There are pockets everywhere. There's a zipper. You could separate it if you'd like to keep maybe your dirty laundry on one side, your clean laundry on the other, your child's clothes on one side, yours on the other. There are several zippers on the outside, and there's even clips on the outside to further make sure that your luggage is not going to pop open. It's hard top on one side, and it's soft on the other, and the rolling wheels are completely 360 degrees, so you're turning the wheels to go into the bathroom. You don't have to worry about it getting caught on the corner. It was just an amazing suitcase.
Yeah.
And Eagle Creek makes a bunch of other really cool things as well. They have these organizers. You can put your medications into them, maybe your unmentionables you don't want someone to see should they decide they're going to open up your suitcase. And, you know, you don't necessarily want someone to see everything that you're going to be wearing. There are certain things you don't want the whole airport to see.
Yeah. You think that that's more of a girl thing than a guy thing? Because I remember looking at that, reading what you had written. I thought, that sounds interesting, but I just usually throw stuff into a suitcase.
Yeah, but do you see how nice and neat that suitcase looks? Do you know how long it takes me to find something? About 2 seconds. Now, when my husband packs a suitcase, it is a completely different story, and God help us all. Like, an organized suitcase is the key to a happy vacation.
Well, all right, if it works. So that was the packet system. That was Eagle Creek also. But I wanted to go back to one thing because I thought it was very cool the way you described it. There's a thing called a keeper on the tarmac suitcase, which I have left jackets and sweaters in taxi cabs and all over the place, largely because I put it on top of my suitcase and it fell off or something. But tell us about the keeper.
I've been traveling in the summer. I haven't had much use of it other than hanging my son's wet life jacket off of it. But it does. It keeps it right there, right on top of it. You're not going to leave it in the bathroom or something. Anybody traveling with children knows that you kind of have your hands full with their luggage, your luggage, and everything in between, dragging it in and out of the bathrooms. And it's nice to not have to worry about the one extra thing, your purse, your coat, your wet life jacket, whatever it is. It's a really nice feature, and I hope that more brands start doing it.
Now, people who go on short trips, business travelers, for example, they often will just take a big garment bag kind of a thing, just for a suit or a couple extra pairs of pants or something like that. Depending on how far you're going, this digs into your shoulders. It's a terrible thing. And I see one of the ones that you looked at had wheels on it, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. What was that about?
Oh, yeah, the Delsey garment bag. That comes in many styles, many shapes, many varieties. Delsey's a great bag. It's still the test of time. It's got exterior pockets. It's got an outside hanging locker clamp so you can keep your clothes from slip-sliding around, whether you're in the car, whether you're in the plane. We all know how travel gets. And yeah, the fact that some of them do come with wheels, you can choose with wheels or without. You can choose the options that best suit your mode of travel, which is also something I really appreciate about Delsey is not everyone travels the same, and Delsey understands that, and you could choose your options.
Excellent, and that's Delsey.com.
Yeah, that's Delsey.com, and you can get the bags from $79 up to $150, depending on the options you choose.
Excellent. You can get more reviews of suitcases and other kinds of travel sorts of stuff and a lot of other things at parentsatplay.com. For Samantha Fuse, I'm Armin Brott. Welcome back to the second part of today's Positive Parenting Show on AFN. I'm Armin Brott. We're going to be continuing in this half of the show our series that we've been doing on organizations that are doing terrific stuff for military families. We're going to start off with an organization that has put together a huge amount of resources that most military families have never even heard about. Next up, we'll talk about employment issues that are facing military spouses. And finally, we're going to meet 11 military spouse entrepreneurs who are doing really amazing things.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Oh, thank you.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Here with Angela Caban, who is the founder of the Homefront United Network. Angela, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we start off with what the Homefront United Network is?
The Homefront United Network was created in 2010. My husband was a National Guard soldier in the Army, and I found it very hard to find resources for families, and we lived about 3 hours away from the nearest installation, so I couldn't find any resources for me, so I just created them. The Homefront United Network, like I said, has been running since 2010. We help families and spouses find support, resources that they perhaps didn't know that were available to them as National Guard and Reserve families, as well as stories that we share, and it's a community where we could build and form friendships.
And are you still involved with it? Is your husband still in the service?
He actually is transitioning over from National Guard into the Reserves now, Army Reserves. So he took a little time off from the National Guard. He is a medic, so he is focusing on getting his RN.
Okay. Now that's got to be a tough profession to be in at this point.
It's very tough just because there's a lot of things that he's seen in his career. It's a little difficult for him, but he loves the medical field. That's actually what he does now. He works as a CNA. He works in home health care, and he just loves being able to help people and give back.
So one of the things you mentioned, and this comes up an awful lot, is that reservists or National Guardsmen, they may be the only people in their zip code or their neighborhood, certainly, who have any clue what's going on. And the services are difficult to come by. They're there. They're on bases, but it's hard to access them. So how did you begin to compile all this information?
It's just a lot of research. I asked anybody that I could find online. I mean, Facebook was a great source for myself to be able to find other people in the community. I also went to military installations for the Guard and Reserve, the units that we had nearby, and I just compiled all the information of the programs, and I just wanted to lump it together and put it in one location. We have a great support in the civilian community, but I think that in those times when their husbands are either away training or deployed, you still need to be able to have the support from the military community.
Well, yeah, you got to get insurance. You have medical needs or something, which the moment they're activated, you take on a much different role.
Absolutely, and a lot of them don't know that. They are given a really, really large packet when their husbands receive their orders or their wives, and it's like, sit down, read this, and it's a little overwhelming. So I want to be able to create a place where if anybody has any questions or they say, you know, hey, how do I get a power of attorney or what do I need to do to enroll my family into the DEER system, which is for the insurance for the family, it's a lot for them to take in, especially if they're not used to it, if they were just kind of thrown into the deployment.
And what's the website?
The website is Homefront United Network, and we're at homefrontunited.com.
So Homefront United Network, or just the, not the network in the URL.
Exactly. It's just Homefront United.
And so somebody goes there. What are they going to see?
They're going to see so many different things. There's a resources tab if you're specifically looking for financial information, medical information. We also have an installations page where you can put in your zip code and find the nearest installation to you. We have a an area where we have writers who blog. We have National Guard, reservists, and we actually have active duty spouses who write for us as well, sharing some of their information, anything from moves to children. I mean, we have food on there. Just a very warm and encouraging place to be when you have that need for somebody who is going through the same thing.
What has response been so far?
The response has been, I mean, we've been at this for 3 years now, and it's growing more and more each day. We've received such a huge response, not only from the National Guard Network, but the active community as well. They're very grateful for something like this because it also explains to them a little bit about what the National Guard families and the reserve families go through.
Yeah, I think that a lot of them don't understand it. It's not a malicious thing. Of course, they just don't understand.
Absolutely. It's not their fault. I always say, you know, I don't expect you to understand what my husband does or what we do as a family. We just wear two different hats. We're civilians, and we're also military.
Angela Caban, who is the founder of the Homefront United Network, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here with Sue Hoppin, who's the founder of the National Military Spouse Network, and want to talk about what that is. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. So tell us about the organization that you founded and why.
Sure. I worked in the nonprofit arena, and I worked for a military officer organization that was the number one lobbying organization for military officers and their families with over 380,000 members. And what I realized is that we did a really good job of supporting transitioning service members. And transitioning service members have a fantastic good old boy network, but the spouses not so much. And with transitioning service members, they transition maybe once when they retire, they separate. But spouses tend to transition every 2 to 3 years when we move from installation to installation. And I could kind of see the writing on the wall, and I could see the money going away for a lot of the family programs, and I want to teach spouses to be ready for that and to become independent and to look for professional development opportunities. There really wasn't a support network that existed at the time, so I left a fantastic, comfortable job with a great organization, and like any sane
person. Complete uncertainty there.
Exactly. So I think I did it because I was insane. No, I did it because my passion is really helping military spouses, and I found that professional military spouses have the least amount of resources, I think because people think that since we're working, we're fine, we don't need the resources.
When you say professional military spouses, you mean who have professions?
Who are working in professional degrees and, you know, who might be doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs, business owners, freelancers, teachers. I think people just assume that if you're already working, you don't need any support. And I would posture that if you're working, you're kind of alone because you're out there with the general population, with people who don't really understand our lifestyle. So we wanted to create a network where people could network with like-minded military spouses who are working with maybe a lot of civilians and talk about their issues with other spouses who are in the same situation.
So what are the issues? I mean, we're not talking about just this is necessarily keeping your nursing certification up or something like that. You're doing something completely different.
We are. A lot of our spouses have problems when they transition because, one, if you're a business owner and you have to think about transitioning your business from installation to installation, you have to think about your licenses. How is it going to impact you with taxes? How is it going to impact you with clients? How do you get the networks established before you PCS the next installation? A lot of our spouses who have jobs with corporations now, and this was well before a lot of these military spouse hiring initiatives, by the time you get to a new installation and you've already networked to a job, you're 12 months into the process and you're already thinking about your next assignment. So, you know, what we do is we teach them, you should start networking before you even start to PCS. You should network 6 months before you leave the installation. We just had a summit, and we had a very young military spouse who's from New Jersey, and she came down here to start networking in the area because they're PCSing down here in 6 months.
All right, so what kind of networking is going on? Is this like a good old girls network where we're going to support each other and help, you know, I know about a job here and there, or what is it?
It is, but it's also the questions that she had specifically were, I mean, what can I anticipate when I get here? What kind of questions are they going to ask me? How do I answer it when they can read my resume and they can see that I'm a military spouse? How do I answer that question of why would we hire you if we know you're going to be gone in three years? So a lot of that is catching our young spouses as they're just coming into the community and helping them with those issues so they don't have the problems we had.
All right, so how do people access the services?
They should contact us at www.nationalmilitaryspousenetwork.org. That's like a really long URL.
That's big. I said that all in one breath.
Okay. You can do it on a URL. Okay. And we also have a great newsletter. They can sign up for it there, and it's absolutely free. We have a digital magazine that goes out twice a year. We have an annual summit every October. And follow us on Facebook, NMS Network, and follow us on Twitter. We've got great information.
Sue Hoppin with the National Military Spouse Network. She's also the author of a terrific book, which I'm not going to tell you about. We just remember the name. We're going to have her on as a guest to talk about the book.
Thank you so
much.
Sue. Thanks.
My name is Adriana Domingos-Lufer, and I'm one of the organizers of the Military Spouse CEO Experience here at AUSA 2013, and I'm also the founder of MSB New Media. What we do at MSB, well, let me start with the Military Spouse CEO Pavilion. What we've done is we've organized and provided an opportunity for military spouse-owned businesses and business owners to showcase their brand to the larger military community. So this Pavilion has allowed military spouses to grow their brand presence, and provide them a platform to show other military spouses that being multidimensional is part of who we are. We are business owners, some of us are parents, some of us are, we're all spouses. So this is a great avenue for that. And through my own business, MSB New Media, what we've done is we've provided a platform for military spouses who blog and who are active in the blogosphere, I hate to say that, but blogosphere, and social media to be able to monetize their endeavors and earn a little bit of money with a very, I think, perfect fit transition career that allows them to move place to place to place and actually continue a stream of income and professional identity.
So how do they get a hold of you?
They get a hold of us at msbnewmedia.com. You can find us on Facebook via Military Spouse Bloggers on our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter at msbnewmedia.
I'm Christina Bell Landry, owner of Dumbbell Fitness. I'm a military veteran and a military spouse. We started a boot camp on Pearl Harbor 5 years ago for military spouses particularly, and we offer free childcare for anyone that works out with us. So that was kind of our niche. However, because they're military spouses, they're constantly moving away from island, going to different duty stations. So we developed an online program that is very similar to what we're doing at the physical locations. You subscribe online. It's a monthly subscription. It's an hour-long workout. The workouts change weekly. There's three workouts per week plus a cardio session. Along with that, you get a weekly article, a weekly healthy recipe, and there's also a social form on there to kind of keep you accountable. So we have, you know, questions like, did you modify the workout? How was the workout this morning? Did you do the workout this morning? How was the recipe? Did you have to put any other ingredients into it? So the subscription, there's two different packages. You can get into the website and get the workouts for $20, or you can get full access with the full stream live videos. Press play when you're ready to work out for $50 per month. The website is www.dumbbellfitness.com, and dumbbell is spelled with one B.
I am Bridget Platt. I am the CEO and founder of Daddy's Deployed and Mommy's Deployed, an entirely personalized children's story for those with a mom or dad deploying. You can find us at www.daddiesdeployed.com or at Facebook, facebook.com/daddiesdeploy, and at Daddy's Deployed on Twitter. So our story is entirely personalized. You choose the deploying parent gender as well as military rank, branch of service, and physical attributes for all those in the family. So when you go to our website, there are drop downs. You go to the order book page and you choose, you'll type in the family last name because we include that on the covers throughout the book and signs. You'll choose the ethnicity. We have a list there. If it's not listed, you click other and a box pops up for you to type in your ethnicity. And you also choose your hair and eye color, genders throughout, and we also ask if you have multiple children to list them in height order so that if Johnny is taller than Sally, Johnny's taller than Sally in the book as well. So we really try to make it as realistic and lifelike as possible so that when they look at the story, it reflects what they're actually going through.
I'm just kind of curious, as you're saying that, if somebody has come back and has an injury or they're in a wheelchair, is that customizable also, or they have a dog?
Absolutely. Our illustrator is amazing, and she'll work with any situation. We're actually working to develop a version that would be a nonprofit portion of our company for those that are wounded or killed in action. We want to provide those for free for everything that those families have done for our country. The website is www.daddysdeployed.com.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Pilcher. I'm the founder and CEO of MilitaryOneClick.com. We have brought together all the best resources and opportunities for military families, veterans, neighbors, friends of, in one-stop shop on the web. We also focus a lot with companies that want to provide opportunities for military families, such as jobs, deals, discounts. We work with those companies to promote the amazing things they're doing for military families. So you can find us on MilitaryOneClick.com, and we have a great social media platform. We're very active on our Facebook page, and love for you to stop by and say hi.
I'm Jessica Birch. I'm the president of Powerhouse Planning. We do anything from business to company development, internal and external communication, and marketing. Kind of in a nutshell, what we do is we take small to growing companies, and it's for primarily companies that can't afford a full-time marketing director, a business developer, just full-time positions, and they would then work through us, and we become those positions by my team of freelancers. And our team of freelancers are normally, and for the most part, all military spouses, so it gives them an opportunity to work in a virtual environment and gives more opportunities for jobs. You can find out more about us at powerhouseplanning.com.
You mentioned that the freelancers are military spouses. How about the companies that you're working with? Who are the ones who would be hiring you? Are they within the military also, military spouses who are trying to get up and running, or outside companies?
Oh, that's a great question. It's actually about 50% right now that I have that I'm working with are military spouses that are growing companies, and then also just some commercial type clients.
How do they get a hold of you?
At powerhouseplanning.com. They can reach me any time of the day.
Hello, my name is Ginger Miller. I am founder and CEO of Women Veterans Interactive, and our mission is to meet women veterans at their point of need through advocacy, empowerment, interaction, outreach, and unification. We have members in 13 states. All of our members receive a 15% discount at Excelsior College. We are empowering women veterans throughout the nation so that they can live better lives.
What exactly are you doing to empower the women?
Well, right now we're empowering women veterans through different programs that we have. We have outreach programs, we have peer-to-peer support programs. We have just recently launched our health and wellness program with one of our partners, Yoga to Sleep. We have a financial literacy program that we just launched in partnership with Prince George's Community College. And we also have a women veterans breakfast series that was funded through MGM Grand International Resorts. And the breakfast series teaches women veterans about all of the services and the support that's available to them. We can be reached at www.womenveteransinteractive.org. You can reach us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Women Vets Action. Again, my name is Ginger Miller. I'm founder and CEO of Women Veterans Interactive.
Hi, my name is Christy DeWitt, and I work for Nomadus. We are a military charm company. We do military charms for service members, spouses, mothers, daughters, whatever your journey has been and your association has been with the military. We have all five service branches. We have Army dog tag, Navy dog tag, all of those. We have all the emblems. We're also in the process of creating duty station charms that kind of tell your story, where you've been stationed throughout your career or where you've moved with your husband. We have specialty charms like baby feet, celebration cakes, little charms to denote other important events that have happened in your life. We have some unit charms like Special Forces. We have some MOS charms like the CH-53. We have the F-18. So we have those different things. And we do the bracelets. We have necklaces, all the accessories. We do everything here. In the United States, there's a staff of about five people. We create the charm, design the charm. We have a foundry in the United States. I would say 90% of our products at this point are made in the United States. All of our charms are. They're 9.25 sterling silver. If you already have a bracelet, maybe from another company, we have worked as hard as we can to ensure that our charms will fit on your other bracelet. And the way we market our products is we do have a website. It's www.nomadescollection.com. And Nomades is N-O-M-A-D-E-S, Nomades. It's Greek for nomads, which is the kind of lifestyle that we lead as military spouses and military service members. We also give military spouses the opportunity to invest in their own business and do sales through direct selling.
Hi, I'm Kelly Dudley with R. Riveter. I'm the public relations coordinator. We make and produce handbags out of recycled military items. We take shelter halves and we hand dye them. We take a high quality veg tan leather and we hand dye that. We employ military spouses as independent contractors throughout the United States. The parts and pieces are made by military spouses all over, and then they're shipped back to Dahlonega, Georgia, where our main fabrication shop is, where they're assembled and shipped off to the customer from there. Every bag is customizable. You can choose your liner, your leather, and your canvas color, and all of them are named after military families.
And you said, I just happened to notice as you were talking to somebody else, that somebody can send in their dress blues and you'll make a bag out of that.
If you have a dress uniform, you can send that in to us. On our website, you'll find a link for an heirloom handbag. You pay an additional cost on top of your bag price that you choose, and you send the uniform to us, and we'll make a bag out of it. You can reach us at www.rriveter.com.
Hi, I'm Lori Churchill with Lock and Ojaba. My husband and I have been in business for about 2.5 years now. What we do is we sell specialty coffee. We source our coffee from the top 2% of coffee beans in the world, and we actually, that coffee comes from a renowned roaster in Washington State that's received Roaster of the Year for 2 times in a row. So much, they're very good at what they do, so much so that they've been asked to not apply for the award because they want to sort of spread the love with everyone else. So we are an online company, and what we do is with every order that we ship out, we donate $1 to military charities. We also send out deployed troop coffee packages. Our customers can have a number of choices of different denominations of deployed troop coffee packages to purchase, and then we send those into combat zones, but we pay for the shipping to get them there. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to www.lockandlojaba.com, and we'll be happy to ship your coffee directly to your front door, to your friend's front door, or your favorite soldier's door.
Hi, my name's Wendy Poling. My company is My Military Life. We have a support website and radio show for spouses, and part of what we're doing here in terms of the show is highlighting these great businesses and resources. The Military Life Radio Show is all about helping you navigate military life before, during, and after. And we're starting a new show. It's called The Military Spouse Show, which we plan to syndicate to military-friendly radio stations. And it's in. You can go to mymilitarylife.com, or you can go to militaryspouseshow.com for more information.
My name is Krista Wells, and my business is the Military Spouse Coach. I started coaching military spouses in 2003, helping them to find portable professions and just provide a supportive community for military spouses that are struggling with moving all the time and trying to find new careers. My website is themilitaryspousecoach.com. Recently, I partnered up with Wendy Poling at mymilitarylife.com, and we started a new radio show called The Military Spouse Show. And I'm really passionate about the show because as a reserve spouse, I am not geographically near a lot of the other spouses. And so by having a radio show, it's a great way to just kind of grab a cup of tea on a Tuesday night and, listen in on the radio and feel like you're part of a broader community of military spouses. And we talk about all kinds of interesting topics such as meal planning, homeschooling, anything that has to do with career or life improvement. And we just have a lot of fun on the show. We've interviewed people like the winner of The Biggest Loser was a military spouse, or we've interviewed people from The Bachelor, and we're interviewing Bill from The Apprentice, and lots of good stuff that's just fun and light and creates that sense of camaraderie and community. And we love to showcase military spouses that are starting businesses or struggling with businesses and help them to take their career and life to the next level. So we hope you'll listen to The Military Spouse Show.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.